The opinions expressed on Latina Voices and its guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of HGTV Television or the City of Houston.
Today on Latina Voices, two of Houston's beacons of light, a Rwanda genocide child survivor and a Venezuelan political prisoner and victim of hostage diplomacy. Their stories of overcoming unspeakable atrocities and unimaginable adversity and navigating through profound darkness to light, finally reaching a state of happiness, albeit never forgetting and always remembering and remaining human rights advocates. The commonalities of Jean Celestine Lakin and Jorge Toledo, extreme suffering, surviving acts of inhumanity, both with compelling testaments to determination, conviction, faith, hope, survival, and human resilience. Latina Voices Smart Talk. I'm host and producer, Texas Super Lawyer Sophia Drogué. Latina Voices is about universal topics from a Latina perspective. Let's engage, educate, and empower with true smart talk. Sean's memoir, A Voice in the Darkness, Memoir of a Rwandan Genocide, is not just an account of her survival. It's a beacon of hope, perseverance, and I think the transformative power of forgiveness. Sean, first you, thank you for your presence and formidable dedication to humanity. Clearly, as you author on the last page of your book, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. A little bit about your story, the impetus for this, before we ask Jorge about his upcoming book.
Thank you so much for having me. So surviving Rwandan genocide and writing that experience in this book was, a lot of people, they ask, was it cathartic? Did it help you heal? And part of it was, but also was that experience that was a little bit tougher to navigate and put on page. So this book really captures before the genocide, living with my family, having that loving experience from my parents and my siblings and my relatives, and then it dives into the genocide of Rwandan genocide against Tutsis, and then at the end of the genocide, obviously, and how I've been here in the United States and the work that I've been able to do in this country as well.
No, it's and the synopsis is incredible. Absolutely worth reading. And you talk about the voice in the darkness, but light at the end, because there's no choice but.
By the light.
As we keep going, and so much to say about the book, Jorge, in your book, A Work in Progress, 1775 Days of Captivity, Survival and Growth. You also reference your quest for the light at the end of the tunnel. Speaking of your journey of brutal and extreme imprisonment, physical and psychological torture, and violations really of the fundamental rights, the courage like hers to triumph over despair, hopelessness, and really a force for creating value. She speaks of forgiveness. You speak of value. A little of your journey and the impetus for the book you're working on.
Well, beyond the fact of the situations that I lived through my almost 5 years of captivity, there is a process that we follow, and that process we follow is basically the answer on how I survived the ordeal. And that is, I think, what is relevant, because it's the response, and that goes from the point of having awareness on the situation as is, not through illusion or any bias, etc. So it's the situation, because a situation is a situation. What makes a difference is the way we approach the situation. And that approach goes all the way through the end of that tunnel where the light is. But this is, in other words, how to describe the that impermanence is what rules the universe. All processes in the universe has a beginning and an end. And that is one of the most critical points to have in your mind, in your conscience, in your heart. just to have the conviction that the ordeal has an expiration date, and not, you know, although I don't know when it's going to finish. So when you have that picture, not only in your mind, also in your internally in your heart, so that is where that light at the end of the tunnel appears.
What's amazing is, and we're going to be back in a moment, but it is this too shall pass, as inordinately challenging and overwhelming and draconian as it may be. But what tools do you utilize to approach that as you go from darkness to light? It's something that our audience can all utilize. We'll be back with Latina Voices in a moment. At 9, Sean experienced brutality, such depth of inhumanity, where in 100 days, over 1 million innocent women, men, and children were senselessly slaughtered, with rape used as a weapon of war. She witnessed the tragic loss of most of her family, fled violent militias with her twin 3-year-old siblings, forced to survive in the wilderness for months, ultimately immigrating to America at 14. In her adulthood, she's earned a master's degree of public administration and public policy, posted a degree in international affairs. Today, she's a celebrated human rights advocate, chairwoman of a formidable force against human trafficking, recently testifying that children are not for sale, global efforts to address child trafficking, manager of disability services at Lone Star, and co-founder with her partner in life, Paul Lakin, of an innovative NGO, 1 Million Orphans, providing sustainable educational support to some of the most vulnerable children across the globe. What a life! And you're so young, Sean. Thank you for your legacy of hope. A little bit about you.
Thank you so much for that introduction. A little bit about me. I feel like life experience from as a child. I really sort of like seen life from my parents, the way they modeled life as example of giving to others. And I wanted to always bring it to humanity because that's how it was modeled to me. I grew up in a family of a Christian family where they just embodied that humanity, where they went out of their way to support the poor, feed the children who are in our community, put them in school. So there was really, living in Rwanda where we were divided by, you know, ethnicity, my parents sort of like crossed the other side. They wanted to see the humanity in people despite the differences. And so the genocide came knocking on our doors when I was just a 9-year-old. My parents divided us in a group of three. I ended up with those 3-year-old twin sisters, as you mentioned, and we were just in the bushes hiding for our lives. I watched my father being killed with machetes and clubs in the streets. I seen my mother's witness her dead body with our 3-week-old little brother as well. And so really the genocide would not have happened until there was this propaganda campaign, ideology of hate. And that's something that I've been fighting for ever since surviving the genocide, to be able to walk across the aisle and see another human being, see that they have value, see that they wish the same thing that we want, which is love and being accepted. So racism is something I talk about a lot, and as I advocate for human rights, really to remind people to embody that humanity.
Well, it's the humanity, but the hatred that you've seen, and it's inordinately sobering. I got goosebumps. Jorge, you have also seen hatred and humanity at its worst. Jorge, you, along with 5 other executives of Citgo Petroleum Corp., later known as the Citgo Six, were political pawns caught in the tragic morass of a geopolitical conspiracy. You spent years in 2 of the worst prisons of Venezuela, infested with rats and roaches, some cells without a bathroom or water for 2 weeks at a time, or cells without windows or ventilation. Members of Congress, House and Senate, the Department of State, the Special Presidential Envoy for Houston, for the Hostage Affairs, U.S. ambassadors and the White House, including the Secretary of State, Vice President of the United States, and ultimately two presidents, were engaged in this international campaign to free the Sitko Six. She's from Rwanda. You're originally from Venezuela. A former oil and gas executive, an enterprise architect, an artist, a marathon runner, believe it or not. His victory, in quotations, among them, running the Houston Marathon on January 15th. He had received release from captivity October 1st, the Boston Marathon on April 17th, and training for the upcoming Marathon for Freedom of D.C. A little bit about him. He is also highly educated and talented, with a degree in mechanical engineering from Simón Bolívar University and an MBA from the University of Miami. Post-release, you also have endeavored in public speaking, drawing from your survival story, an advocate to the attention of hostage diplomacy, and your Bring Our Families Back campaign, including in Houston, the July 4th unveiling of your mural. Jorge, so much to say, like Sean. Key events in this odyssey of captivity.
Well, in 5 years, there's a lot that happened, and I call it an evolution. It was evolutive on how it started from, you know, the shocking moment, the reality check on, you know, this is happening, so there's something happening. And then at that moment, the uncertainty on when this is going to be solved. Whenever you realize that you're in the midst of a geopolitical affair, and that adds a huge complexity. And then, you know, you start evolving on a process that takes time, and you see, you know, a lot of actors involved. And there's a point when, you know, you realize that you have control of nothing but three basic things: your mental, physical, and spiritual health. And at that moment, it's to make the decision, if I want to survive, and I made the decision of surviving, so I want to be focused on the three things that I have control. And then I started working on, you know, preserving my mental, physical, and psychological health, although I was in the midst of physical and psychological torture, white torture, isolation, you know, and lack of proper nutrition, etc. But that is a process that you start to follow. And then, you know, your internal decision of surviving and the emerging or putting as a target your a meaning or a purpose on your survival. And my purpose and my meaning was my family. So because I made the decision of survive for my family, I wanted to go back to them stronger than ever.
And I'll say, I will say, we've got a break for a second, but family is absolutely something that we're going to talk about. And there'll be an image, you see them today, but there'll be an image that was telecast across the world. At one point, I think at your lowest, 118 pounds. And there's so much suffering that I know you don't discuss, probably purposely and necessarily. But we'll return with more on Latina Voices momentarily. Thank you. President George W. Bush, in an interview for Out of Many, One, E Pluribus Unum, Portraits of America's Immigrants, talks of the beauty of immigrants for our country's future, overclouded by harsh rhetoric. Indeed, on our show today, we're all born elsewhere, Argentina, Rwanda, Venezuela. President Bush featured Sean in his book and highlighted her in recent interviews, that he's honored to call her a friend, finding her heart full, her talk magical, her smile beautiful, and stories of higher powers. As noted also, President Trump and President Biden advocated personally for the release of Jorge Toledo and the Sitko Six, including proof of life requests were made to the Maduro regime. First reflection, Jean, about your experience meeting President Bush. And Jorge, why was this so important to the U.S.?
Meeting President Bush has always been a dream of mine, which was something that it's a dream, and I was told in the past to put it aside. But I admired President Bush. There's just something about him and his family that I felt like that embodiment of humanity, it showed without even speaking about it. So I would travel to Dallas for speaking engagement, and I would say, I would love to have a cup of coffee with President Bush. My husband laughed, but I think it was 2020, right before COVID, when we were invited to come and have a meeting with him in the Houston Public Library. And it was just so beautiful to walk into the room and see him stand up with his beautiful wife to embrace us. That just made us feel so comfortable. We felt like, you know, like old
that
friends.
Image, him holding your hand, is stunning.
Thank you. They just have such a beautiful heart. He calls me a friend, and I was just, you know, it's incredible to have that experience, but also to be recognized. I think a lot of times we get out in the world and we do work that we feel like we're supposed to do, and we don't realize who's watching. And that's what I encourage a lot of young people to, you don't have to be putting a tally on what you do, because what you do, whether it's being recognized, it will make an impact. And so as a I was academic advisor then, just really working in education, and to receive a call from a president of, you know, from a president of the United States, I was just like, wow.
No, it's incredible. And Jorge, the world was watching. The presidents were watching. Why was that involvement, and what did it feel like when you got the chance on October 1st to ultimately exit?
Well, I think we need to go to the core of this issue, which is hostage diplomacy. As President Biden stated last year, hostage diplomacy is an issue of national security in the U.S. because it's a direct attack to the U.S. citizens. And the U.S. citizens, the abduction of the U.S. citizens by authoritarian governments are used to get into a coercion as a foreign policy strategy from these countries vis-a-vis the U.S. So hostage diplomacy is a crime against humanity. And a crime against humanity, according to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, has the same category of a genocide. And I didn't know that. So now the issue beyond, you know, what I suffered in my captivity or how I did to how I managed to survive is how to find a permanent solution to this issue that is affecting us all over. So because we're using, these governments are using the U.S. population as a bargaining chips to pursue some personal or country-related benefits. In our case, in the case of Venezuela and the U.S. relationship, so there was a story about a very tense a relationship since Hugo Chavez took over the presidency of Venezuela back in 1998. So when that was in this situation evolved toward the imposing sanctions, economic sanctions, restrictions for traveling to the U.S., visas, etc. So it was a lot of tension. And in the midst, it seems that hostile countries to the U.S. took advantage of this in order to get into Venezuela and set up position in an unprecedented ways. And I'm talking about Russia, China, Iran. They are not friends of the U.S. So it opened the door for these hostile countries to position themselves in the Western Hemisphere for the very first time ever. This is the implications of hostage diplomacy, and I think that we as a society, as a civilized world, we need to respond accordingly to that.
Well, and I'll say, you said it beautifully, but at the end of the day, and we've got to switch for other, because I want to cover family, But I will say you were pawns. You were caught completely up, and you were doing your job impeccably as at Citgo, but you were caught up. And at the end of the day, President Trump, all the others, President Biden, of course, and others took notice and realized you needed to come home and did everything possible. Switching gears for a minute, you mentioned family. Sean, your husband, Forrest, has been your partner, companion, closest advisor. Well, actually, the book is authored along with Paul, spending countless of the hours writing the book with you. Jorge, with the chaos and confusion of the events surrounding your arrest, you've pointedly noted that your family kept you alive spiritually and figuratively. And I know this, ensuring daily water and food and the brutal captivity. We've got less than 3 minutes. How the heck can we do this? Family as a catalyst for inspiration. Sean, a couple of thoughts, and let's give it to Jorge.
For me, with the support of family means everything. It is actually the reason I feel like I survived. When I was paired with my three-year-old twin sisters, I sort of, like Jorge, I was looking to protect my three-year-old twin sisters compared to how I was going to protect myself. And they gave me the hope. And I want to encourage everybody to find hope in whatever that situation they might be going, you know, for or through. Because the minute you lose hope, everything goes down south, really honestly. And so having that hope, knowing that there's a light at the end of the tunnel in every circumstance really brings up what we need to do and to achieve. So I'm grateful for my husband, who I met in Washington State, who really encouraged me to write this book. When I was writing this book, he said, at first I thought it was a story for my siblings, but then he said, no, the world needs to hear this. And so he's been an encouragement. He's graduating from law school next year, so I'm proud.
Incredible. Family, Jorge, and we've got so little time for you to say so much.
Well, the big picture short is my family was the meaning and the purpose for me to survive. That was the reason. And purpose and meaning is so important for you whenever you make a decision to survive, then, because that is the why. Why am I going into a survival process? And when I went through that process that ended on October 1st, 2022, and I went to my family, so I said to my wife, I fulfill my promise. I'm here, stronger than ever.
By the way, I screamed when Carmen called me. Screamed! More on Latina Voices when we return. We're back with more in a segment we call Smart Times, an expanded conversation, epidemic within the pandemic, the U.S. Surgeon General's advisory on the healing effects of social connection and community, just published the 2023 Our Epidemic of Loneliness and Isolation, a U.S. national public health concern. Jean and Jorge, given your tragic circumstances, one 24 or so years ago, and one that ended about a year ago, advice for those suffering in silence, your path from darkness to light. Once again, we're going to mix it up a little bit. We're going to start with Jorge. A little bit of your advice. There is so much loneliness. There's so much despair. They don't need to be in a Venezuelan prison. Given what you did, what are some of a cope mechanism? What haven't you shared with us, Jorge?
Well, there's a couple of things that comes into my mind and comes out of my experience. The first one is, you know, your mind. And I think your mind could be your best friend or your worst enemy. And in a critical situation like the one I lived, your mind could become your worst enemy, creating despair, anguish, and depression. Mm-hmm. And people commit suicide in prison because of these three basic reasons. And there's a fundamental in Buddhism that tells that we need to make our spirit the master of our mind. not otherwise. How I can make my spirit the master of my mind is the taking consciousness that I can change the environment because I am part of the universe. I'm not an isolated entity. So the internal transformation in terms of culture, values, and education is something that is going to create the pillars of my structure that is going to help me to survive, particularly your values. And values means, I'm not talking about moral or ethical things, family. Family is the core of your values.
Family, however it's defined, not everyone has a traditional family, but just something of support.
Family is a broader concept.
No, absolutely. And Sean, a little bit about what are your words of wisdom with what you went through in your voice in the darkness to light?
Really, the wisdom was, for me, growing up in a family where I was able to experience the love of Christ, sort of like it made the structure sort of sink in a little bit more. The roots of knowing who God was as a child really helped me through the genocide. I mean, when you think about the genocide, it just and being raped as a child as well, because as you mentioned, in Rwanda, the rape was used as a weapon. UN counted up to 500,000 women being raped in the, you know, in the genocide. So that clouds your, you know, people's mind. And again, sort of that experience of Rwandan genocide, having even in our world today, there's so much brokenness. But I also feel that I was sharing at the Congress, when Congress Smith asked me this question, we have to sort of like get back even like in a church. There's a lot of people leaving the church, but there's that, we talk about that family, even with Jorge, family in a church grounds you. And I think that's what is missing today. If I did not have the faith that I had, I would not have survived the genocide. If I did not have the ability to forgive what had happened to me, I would not have been able to do the things I do today. So really faith carried me through the book, A Voice in the Darkness. There was that voice of God that really told me, God would tell me and I would hear, move from this bush, go to the next, go to these people, shake their hands. And so there was this really voice of God that carried me through, that voice in the darkness.
And I will tell you, I'm exasperating because there's so much to say. You've covered so much, referencing your rape from one bush to the next, just surviving. The commonality, the higher, whether it's Buddhism, whether it's Christ, whether it's God, something other and larger than you. Right. I think the spiritual context. We thank you for joining us on Latina Voices. We'll be back next time. I don't think it can get more interesting and more pointed with topics that matter to all of us. Until next time, stay smart.